Welcome to Money, Markets and Masterminds, a Citywire South Africa podcast that delves into the intricate world of finance, investment and strategic decision making. If you're a fund selector or an independent financial advisor looking for insights, analysis and expert opinions to enhance your perspective, you're in the right place here with me, editor Ruan Uyster. In today's episode, we're delving into the captivating, sometimes controversial story of continuous professional development, or CPD for short, with a specific spotlight on the practitioners that ensure local taxpayers remain compliant and who the South African Revenue Service, or SARS as most of us call it, trust have the skills and support to be able to do so. CPD in South Africa has its roots in the broader context of career development, which have evolved over time to meet the changing needs of very specific industries like financial, legal, and tax planning and advice. And these practices often overlap. So it's not uncommon for a qualified lawyer to run a wealth manager practice that also provides tax services, for example. But to remain registered with SARS in terms of the Tax Administration Act, practitioners are required to comply with a minimum of 18 verifiable CPD hours annually. These hours are split between the topics of tax, ethics, and other related services provided by the practitioner, such as accounting, auditing, payroll, or business advisory. A significant development around the concept of CPD in this country was the establishment of various professional bodies across different sectors, like the Financial Planning Institute, the Legal Practitioners Council, and the South African Institute of Taxation, or commonly referred to as SITE. These type of organizations ensure their members fill the required training quotas, whether it's statutory or not, which intend, of course, to maintain a certain standard of competence throughout their careers. In studio today is Stian Kloo, the founder and former CEO of SITE, who heads up the tax faculty now, an offshoot of SITE's former development and training arm. He's also the founder and a significant shareholder in the Accounting Academy, which caters for the accounting profession in South Africa. Welcome, Stian.
Hi, Ruan. Nice to be on your show.
Firstly, to understand the significance of CPD, let's take a step back and explore the historical roots of this concept, which is loosely defined, and I wrote this down, as the ongoing process of learning and developing skills and knowledge throughout one's career. So, Stian, in your experience, what vital role has CPD and the professional bodies that manage the process played in shaping these industries? And where does that leave professions like the legal fraternity who don't impose the same development initiatives?
Ron, yeah. So, historically, CPD has been a concept that developed over the years as a mechanism for professionals or for graduates, once they qualify from obtain a degree, that they ensure that they maintain that level of technical proficiency to remain up to date. Now, in changing landscapes such as legal, tax, accounting, medicine, it's another example. CPD fulfills a really critical role. And it's traditionally been the various professional bodies, the voluntary bodies that require ongoing learning, lifelong learning is another word for it, to remain technically proficient. And that's really the historic reason for that. It has become more and more important in this day and age in which we see, changes coming through fast and furious.
The evolution of CPD within SITE and the tax faculty mirrors the broader development of professional standards and practices in South Africa. But why is CPD required for tax advisors specifically? And how has it evolved since SARS regulation was introduced in 2013 to compel the registration of tax practitioners?
Yeah, Ruan, so The tax profession per se, I mean, you pointed out earlier that, tax is mostly an overlap between accounting practitioners can specialize in tax or perform tax work, tax compliance work or tax advisory work, and the legal profession usually get involved when there's disputes or litigation with SARS, and then from the financial advisory industry, you need to be able to advise your clients on investments or on this investments that you need to have a current knowledge on the various legislation that applies to the specific scenario. Now, the tax profession has really, in the last 15 years, have really developed into a profession in South Africa in its own right. Whereas in the international community, even in Africa, Nigeria, the tax profession has been established profession for many years, even Zimbabwe. But in the early 2000s, Trevor Manuel pointed out that due to the fact that the tax profession in South Africa is highly unregulated, they identified a concern that there are practitioners out in the industry who performs tax practitioner work without any oversight. So the focus on CPD for the tax practitioner community, for the tax advisory community, has really been driven by SARS since they introduced the regulation. There was first a voluntary, not voluntary, a simple registration process in 2004, and it subsequently evolved into a fully regulatory model in which various professional bodies like SAICA, the Financial Planning Institute, SITE, SAIPA, have been recognized by SARS as controlling bodies to assist SARS in the regulation of the profession, which is quite unique because in the auditing profession, you've got IRBA, the Independent Regulatory Board for Auditors, or in the financial services sector, you've got the FCA. But in South Africa, the tax profession evolved into a profession in its own right with overlaps to other professional bodies or their professionals from various professional bodies also practice taxation. Now, the SARS identified as part of the concern of an unregulated profession, SARS identified a number of errors, common errors that's been committed by practitioners within that unregulated profession, the early 2000s. And that really, provided SARS, with a perspective that clearly practitioners are not up to date always in terms of applying the law. And as tax evolve, and you've got various court cases coming out on a regular basis, you've got annual tax amendments, you've got the budget speech that introduces tax changes. So SARS identified that as a massive risk. Obviously, it concerned the public interest because SARS had to correct and taxpayers would say, well, my tax practitioner, completed my form and they made a mistake. So SARS sat with this situation that, they had to, take into consideration the penalties and interest they're charging a taxpayer. But they've been assisted by a person who are not regulated or registered as a practitioner. And that's why SARS took a keen interest in the concept of CPD and laid down certain requirements of the various controlling bodies, of which the Legal Practice Council is one. It's a statutory body, but yeah. So that's really, why tax CPD was introduced and why it's been singled out. But as I pointed out earlier, this is not a new topic or requirement. It's something that has been a requirement over many years, over many different professions, although it was voluntary. It's various professional bodies require, whether they statutory bodies or quasi-statutory bodies, they do require CPD of its members. But in this case, SARS keeps a close eye on and even directs the controlling bodies in terms of setting that standard of compliance.
Stian, I recently read an article where SARS Commissioner Edward Kiesvetter said during his revenue collection review for the 2023-24 tax year that the revenue services found non-compliance by more than 50 taxpayers tax professionals within their own affairs. As they say, the shoemaker's shoes are always broken. And they started the process of having their licenses revoked. So SARS started the process already. And at the time of the media briefing, which was on the 1st of April, 8 people's registrations had already been suspended. What do these corrective actions indicate in the tax space? And could this set a precedent for other industries in the future?
Most definitely, Ruan. That's a very good observation that you're making. The commissioner, you know, having worked with SARS now for 15 years on a head office level, what I've seen is that when SARS makes such pronouncements in the public, one needs to take it very serious. It also reflects the thinking of government, not just in the tax compliance space or in the SARS space, but also what it means in terms of the the national consideration of government and the thinking. And considering our grey listing, as well as the corrective measures for us to remove from the grey list, one needs to take the pronouncement of a commissioner quite seriously and not just in the tax space. So a very appropriate question. So one of the things that the commissioner pointed out is he referred to two terms that, that I contemplated over the last week. And I'm not sure if and I'm not seeing this, concern or how can I say, I don't think a lot of professionals identified what it's actually signaling. So one of the words that he used is professional enablers, which is quite a strong pronouncement, and I'll unpack that in a moment. And then the other comment he made is plausible deniability. Now, what does mean when he raised it? He was specifically referring to the banks in terms of the relationship with the clients. And he was specifically referring to the money laundering and the role of the banks in addressing that. It's not just the government or FIC or Reserve Bank or FCA, duty. They basically they're saying these professional enablers, a bank can be defined as a professional firm, auditing firms, practitioners, investment specialists, financial advisors, lawyers, anybody that can be seen as organized business, organized professionals or professionals can be seen as a professional enabler. So one of we would have seen now last year, you would have heard obviously that accountants also need to register as accountable institutions with the FIC, and hence why the focus of the commissioner was on this concept of professional enablers. But not everybody, realized that, even if you do not have to register with the FIC, you need to be a responsible citizen. You need to be a responsible professional. And what the signal is that the we can no longer aim at a low water mark. We need to aim for a higher standard. Meaning, it's not just about ticking the box anymore about FICA a client or taking note of doing the minimum work on a client. If you've got reason to believe or suspect that a client there's a question mark regarding the integrity or otherwise the ethics, even so it's not just about legal or illegal. The bar is lifting. It's a level higher. It's about, whether this client is ethical and whether their approach is in the public interest, because it's higher. So yeah, it does signal most certainly. And I think what we are going to see, some drastic developments and further announcements, I foresee based on his pronouncements. In the near future, where there can be further regulatory changes and more pressure put on various industry bodies or professional bodies to ensure that the individuals under their scope, whether it's a member of a professional body, that the institutions are keeping them accountable and ensuring that they lift the standards of expectation. So that, because what he's basically saying, the CEO of SAICA or the CEO of SAIC or the CEO of the Legal Practice Council cannot say, well, I'm not accountable to what my member in Cape Town is doing. Okay. We, we lay down the rules and then they must follow the rules, and we there's a difference between us and their conduct. Basically what he's saying with reference to the banks, that you cannot say, well, I figure a client, I identify risks, and that's where my duty and of care ends. He's saying you need to do more. The question is how much more? And in the banking space, we've seen with SARS, issuing the banks with notices to pay tax debts without notifying the clients. That's been controversial in the past. And we've seen that banks have quadrupled their compliance units in that respect. So we're gonna see much more of that. And I think even a financial planner in George, how they conducted their business and serviced their clients in the past, that's going to change in future.
One of the defining features of CPD at Sight is its focus on practical relevance through partnerships with industry experts, government agencies, and academia. But how do professional bodies like SAICA or SAIPA that you just referred to, who represent the accounting and auditing professionals, and Sight, for example, ensure that its CPD programs address real-world challenges and equip professionals with the skills needed to navigate complex financial environments and the cross-border order transactions that go with it?
Ron, yeah, so this is one of those areas that, you know, as I said, see, professional bodies voluntarily in the past introduced CPD. And with that, it was a revenue-generating mechanism for professional bodies because they were voluntary. So but it made up a significant amount of revenue, and it contributed to the growing concern of these organizations. But as professional bodies now fulfill a regulatory function and have the capacity or mandate to actually remove or strike the person from the role, so to speak, and revoke their licenses, this thing is actually becoming a conflict of interest for the associations, because they have to play judge, jury, and executioner. Because if a member does not comply with CPD, then they need to discipline the member. But so the concept of the CPD programs that they offer in itself is a controversial topic, considering the evolution of the role of professional bodies. So the professional bodies need to be forward-looking and identify the competencies that's required to be able to practice that profession. So in the practitioner space, to identify, areas that they need to be proficient in to be able to provide tax services or tax advice that is relevant, current, as well as in the public interest and meets the government requirements in terms of ongoing competence to practice. So, in terms of the real world examples part of your question and the real world challenges, that is again something that they need to identify within a competency framework. So, for example, in considering the current digital disruption and automation of returns and AI, that should become a key competency for the future. And they need to ensure that the CPD policies and requirements align with that changing world. So, and then obviously whenever they accredit or engage with universities or CPD providers or training providers, that they emphasize the need for integrating technology into the technical content and not just be pure theory, because, you know, you can know the, if you know the theory, you're not necessarily be able to apply it in the real world setting.
Stian, in the early days, CPD activities were limited to traditional seminars and workshops that had to be attended in person. But technological advancements and the COVID pandemic, for that matter, has allowed for CPD providers to provide online learning platforms, webinars, and e-courses, making CPD more accessible. But has this new approach maintained the same levels of intellectual penetration? And what are still some of the current limitations of CPD platforms and the provision of it, especially within the tax advisory landscape?
Yeah, so, Ron, I think you know, the technological advancements as well as the COVID pandemic has really shifted the way in which training is provided in many professions. So universities had to adopt a blended model and offer training online. So in terms of the impact, I believe that CPD, the accessibility of CPD or training for professionals have increased. Why? Traditionally, the cost of a live webinar or a live seminar that one attended in person ranged between 1,000 and 2,500 rand for a 4 hour. Then you had to take into account travel time and that the professional had to spend in getting to the venue. And the reason why it was so high is because of the venue costs. I mean, it's quite expensive to rent a venue, between 15,000 and 25,000 for venue hire. Then you need to pay for food and parking, etc. So it made it quite expensive. So the technological advancements have really accelerated the adoption of online learning by professionals. And it's a lot cheaper. It now ranges between 250 rand and 500 rand for a webinar, which makes it a lot more financially affordable. So in that sense, I think the accessibility has drastically increased. In addition to that, you can now also like catch up, DSTV catch up. You can also watch or attend these webinars in your own time. While you're driving to the office, you can switch it on your phone and you can listen to it while you're driving or over weekends or at night times. So even the opportunity cost of not being able to sit in front of a client, that's also a cost of wanting to take into consideration. So it's not just the 2,000 rand you pay for the 4 hour. It's also your fee that you now know during working hours that that you could not charge to a client. Then, in terms of the quality, in certain respects the quality is better. In certain respects the quality, there's an impact. So let me quickly go to the positive side. The positive side is, in a physical venue format, some people are afraid to speak up, and it can become disruptive if a lot of people talk. In a webinar format and setting, what we've seen is more participation by the delegates amongst each other, and they ask more questions than in a physical face-to-face scenario. So there's a lot more robust engagement. What we've done at Tax Faculty is that we pre-record these webinars, so the presenter on the live date when the event is live streamed, on that day, the presenter also sits and answers the questions. Whereas if it was a face-to-face venue, what we've seen is a presenter can only deal with so many questions, otherwise it becomes disruptive. Now we see that the person who wants to continue to listen, he doesn't look at the chat box and the comment box where the presenter is answering a question. He or she can carry on listening to their recording, whereas the presenter can answer those individuals within the comments box or the chat box. The area that that I do believe is currently a challenge is the workshop-based face-to-face events that was hosted in the past. So where you have roundtables and you do case studies. An example, so the workshop seminars. So now, because it's so expensive, it's even now more expensive because you're attracting less people to the physical venues, these webinars have almost like died out. So we're not seeing a big uptake because so I think the people have become lazy to travel to these venues. So that hands-on practical application of the theory and the knowledge, I believe, is the only I can say dropping standard or that I can that we are experiencing. But I mean, we're not seeing a drop in the competency levels. In fact, we've seen the competency levels of online attendance increase because in the past, in face-to-face events, what we've seen is that you could get CPD for just attending the event. For us to now monitor attendance, we actually impose a test after the webinar that assessment that the delegates need to answer and passing with a pass mark of 80%, meaning that they will not get a CBD, even though they were for the 2 hours or 4 hours in the webinar, they will not get CBD points unless they pass the test. Whereas in the past, you could merely go to a venue, sign your name on the register, and you get your CBD points. So again, it's a mixed bag, but I think more positive than negative.
Stian, to round off the conversation for today, after we revisited the past and explained the present, let's look into the future. And you have touched a little bit on technology and artificial intelligence and machine learning. But what do you imagine CPD, or how do you imagine CPD evolving in the future?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Ruan. And I think that's a big positive with AI and automation. So yes, so let's start off with the mundane work that's going to be replaced by AI. Once technology provides you with a result, let's say, for example, a trial balance, or if I can use the accounting example, in the past, the various entries were performed by the individual, the bookkeeper. Then the trial balance is produced, or a tax return. You provided transactions into your accounting system, you produce a report, and you complete the tax return. So you've been every step of the way, you've applied your professional judgment to the transactions. With automation, like you see now with automation of SaaS returns, now you need to identify errors that the system made. So technical proficiency is going to become even more important, because you need to almost like check the computer. Okay, so from that perspective, in the day-to-day role of a tax accountant or a tax advisor. So from that perspective, that I see is CPD is going to play a bigger role. One will have to incorporate CPD opportunities in real time. So when you sit with a situation with a deferred tax calculation, or whether you can invest, how much money you can invest offshore, you will need to be able to instantly get micro learning on a topic to check the Reserve Bank regulations. Okay. And you shouldn't wait for a webinar on the topic, when it is held later on the year by either your professional body or by the CBD provider. So really, in real time, that's how I see it's going to change. Technical proficiency can become even more important, because you will need to be able to critically evaluate the results that you receive from the system, the IT system. And then I also believe that, looking at how we can use AI and technology to rather apply a one-size-fits-all. So, for example, the annual tax update, usually we sit through a four-hour thing, even though you may only specialize in corporate tax or only international tax, or you only deal with small businesses, not large businesses. But now the professional needs to sit, or even financial advisors. I mean, now you need to sit and listen to content that is not relevant to your area of practice. Now, that is where AI comes in, and technology, where you would be able to personalize the learning pathways and for individuals based on their unique area of practice or interest. Now, what we've seen at Saika has been quite innovative in this regard. Saika, post all these scandals with the accounting profession, they've identified that, as part of the investigation, they've obviously identified that, listen, we need to relook, because clearly, with all the CPD being required by SAICA for many years, yet all of these scandals happen. And a lot of it is, we've seen, that SAA, senior official who was a CA, who made serious blunders. Going back to the CPD, she attended CPD, but why did she still make technical errors? It's because of the one-size-fits-all CPD policies. Whereas with AI, one would now be able to do diagnostics And one would be able to identify the learning or the skills gaps in individuals, so that well, in professionals, so that you can identify, because we don't know what we don't know. And that's where AI can come in, where we do an annual diagnostic. So let's say you tick a box, I'm a CA, but I work in only in accounting, or I'm a CA, I work in tax. So then one would be able to use technology and AI to identify your skills gaps, and then you can get directed learning rather than one size fits all. So I think that's going to also make it more interesting, because I like to do these online tests, you know, three tests, and they say, you know, what's your personality, or what is this, and you, what is your skill set, and what's your interest. And the AI comes up with some suggestions for you. And I think I find that quite, because it's personalized, it's unique to me as an individual. And I think one will see a better uptake and appreciation for CPD, not just as a tick box approach for my compliance purposes or for SARS purposes to say, well, I'm compliant. The question is, are you compliant or you have the knowledge? And I think both regulators as well as the individuals, we all want, as well as the ultimate client, you want your advisor to be technically proficient and not just compliant from a SARS or from a FICA perspective.
Well, that is all the time we have for today. And thank you, Stian, for your time, your insight into the world of CPD and compliance, and some of the policies and practice that go with it was quite the education. And to all our CityWire South African listeners, thank you for tuning in to this episode of Money, Markets and Masterminds with me, editor Ruan Uesta. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to subscribe, leave a review and share it with your network. We are available on all major platforms such as Spotify, Google and Apple Podcasts. Until next time, goodbye.